No. My daughter is learning to drive, and she always puts the phone in the console. I'm like, don't do it! She's always looking down. Oh. All right. Good afternoon. This is a public rulemaking hearing held in accordance with the State Administrative Procedure Act, specifically Section 244.103 Colorado Revised Statute. The date is Thursday, August 14, 2014, and the time is 1:05 p.m. We are meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room on the third floor of the Office of the Secretary of State at 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. I am Deputy Secretary of State Suzanne Steyert and convening this hearing in accordance with the rulemaking notice published in the Colorado Register on July 25, 2014. Seated to my far right is Leanne Morrow, First Assistant Attorney General. Next to her is Dwight Shulman, County Regulation and Support Manager in our Elections Division. Seated to my right, Judd Choate, our Director of Elections. To my left is Stephanie Mann, a legal analyst in the Elections Division, and Andrea Geiger is our rulesmaking specialist. The purpose of this hearing is to receive comments from the public on proposed amendments to the Secretary of State's election rules. As stated in the notice, the purpose of the rulemaking is to consider amendments and revisions to the election rules in order to improve the administration and enforcement of Colorado's election laws and to increase the transparency and security of the election process. Specifically, the Secretary is considering permanent adoption of rules to implement Senate Bills 14-161 and 14-158 and House Bill 14-1164. The Secretary of State released a preliminary draft of proposed rules with the notice of rulemaking. On August 7, 2014, revised proposed draft rules were made available to the public. Both drafts are available on the office website, and copies of the rulemaking, revised draft statement of basis, and the revised draft rules are available on the table in the back of the room. This is a formal rulemaking hearing. The meeting is audio recorded, and all comments become part of the official legal record. This hearing is also being broadcast over the internet. For anyone who wishes to testify at this hearing, there are sign-up sheets on the table at the back of the room. You must sign up in order to testify. And for the record, our office has received written comments on the proposed rules. All comments received will become part of the official record of this hearing and will be posted online. At this time, all interested parties have an opportunity to submit any data, views, or arguments on amendments to the election rules in writing and, if desired, orally. So I'm just going to call people off of the sign-up sheet in the order that you signed up. And the first person is Al Kolwitz, and you didn't put yes, but since you're standing up, I assume you'd like to testify.
Thank you very much, Deputy Secretary. My name is Al Kolwitz. I'm from Boulder, Colorado. I'm here speaking for the Colorado Voter Group. I will tell you that I was a member of Boulder County's 2014 primary election canvas board. That's my credential, I guess. Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today. As you know, Colorado Voter Group has submitted an extensive submission describing multiple defects with the election system and in general and the rules in particular, and has made some written suggestions about things that could be changed. I'm here primarily to answer any questions, since the submission was rather wide. It's a 12-page report. You might tell me, to begin, why our report was not included on the website, as were 50 or 60 reports or submissions.
Well, I think I asked somebody about that this morning because I received your email about it, and it was a little bit unclear because what you had submitted was an election complaint. It looked like a copy of that prior complaint, as well as the report as a result of the canvas. And we were trying to, well, the staff was trying to decipher if that was intended to be a comment on the rules, or were you trying to include that as a general report for publication? If you could just tell me how it relates back to the rules.
Okay. The election rules absolutely failed to cover, I don't know how many, but enough to be very disturbing problems that occurred during the primary election. Everything from the glossary being totally inadequate to today's move to mail ballot. The whole set of the writings is behaving as though we were still in a vote in your local precinct mode. That's an illustration. Another illustration is we're pointing out that the rules have obviously failed to protect the integrity of the election, and we gave as a recitation the fact that on the department's website, the actual election results that were posted for this primary election passed are absolutely, unarguably wrong. And the system doesn't find these errors or chooses to ignore them. Those are two tiny illustrations of dozens of things that we're concerned about. So if that helps.
Sure. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and post it.
I take it that nobody's read it. So I take it further that there's no purpose of me being here answering questions about it. And I take it I've wasted my time once again.
Well, Mr. Kowitz, I mean, it's not included in the packet. I mean, obviously, I read the complaint when it came in previously. My understanding was there was nothing in there that specifically that was new that related to these rules. I don't know if Dwight probably read it because he reads everything.
I did read it. And I was also present in Boulder during portions of the canvas. I guess my feeling is that the, at least with respect to the canvas issues that you've raised, I think those are legislative deficiencies. I mean, assuming that you are correct, I think the problem there lies in legislation. I don't think our proposed rules that we're here to consider today alter the pre-existing canvas rules substantially. So, I'm not sure how your report pertains to the proposed rules that we put out for comment.
Well, it's possible for us to have that discussion if that's what you really want, but I'm not sure that's your intent. I wrote this for the group. It's a collaborative effort, obviously, but I had in mind that we were talking about specific instances, not generalities, that illustrated that the rules fail to accomplish the principal goal of the department and of the counties in making there be fair and accurate elections. You have been there, Mr. Shulman, to see the issue with something as elementary as the lack of clarity on when is a ballot cast. The rules don't help us. Now, I went to Catholic school, and I learned that there are errors of commission and errors of omission. And I think we need to address both. We have a situation now where we are destined to repeat the failures of the 2012 and 2014 elections via the canvas boards. And now is the time to stop that. In our opinion.
Well, we do have, where do we have cast ballot?
You have cast ballot defined in the same sense that I said earlier. It's as though people were voting in person in local precincts. That is not 90% of the ballots. You're ignoring 90% of the ballots.
Well, I mean, I think I have somewhat distilled the argument, which is that, but to some extent, you have to agree, we'll never know what ballots didn't make it to the clerk's office.
I absolutely agree. However, the canvas board is tasked with knowing how many ballots were cast. That is the rule. That is the law. And you must provide a mechanism for the canvas board to affect that law.
But if a cast ballot is the ballots that are received at the clerk's office, then can't it be balanced at that point?
You can call it ballots received. That might be the rule change you want to make. And then we can argue in public about the fact that there are disappearing ballots.
Right.
Right now, the law is being used and the rules are being used to cover up a true problem, a problem that ballots are disappearing, being stolen, or inadvertently not delivered to the county. Give it to your roommate, he put it in his briefcase, forgot all about it, sorry, it's 4 days after the election. And I don't think it's an appropriate thing to get down to nits and grits and particulars. The issue is that the law and the rules do not reflect the current reality of 90% mail ballot. And we cannot allow that to go into November. It's our opinion. We have, for the benefit of the public, published our report and our letters to you that were not posted on your website at ColoradoVoterGroup.org, and the public can see what we're talking about.
Right. And for the record, we'll go ahead and publish it and receive it as comment.
Thank you very much. And we are absolutely available to meet and discuss, and you know, we are not so vain to think that everything we think is correct. We're listening as well as talking.
Right. Well, and in some part, it's not a matter of correctness. I mean, I will agree with you. There's a lot of outdated provisions in Title I that didn't come along when mail ballots were implemented. But, I mean, obviously you understand the position that this office is in.
Absolutely. And I'm empathetic and trying to help.
Right. Okay.
I have a request from Marilyn Marks, who is not likely to make it over here. She's going to try very hard. May I take 2 minutes?
Sure.
This is in behalf of Marilyn Marks for the Citizen Center. She was very disturbed to see some letters, particularly from ACLU and Common Cause, regarding group voting and the number of people that are, from their perspective, somewhat disenfranchised because of some of the rules that are being put in place to control the chain of custody of ballots and to protect a mail ballot voter from the sort of things that the precinct did by having 200-foot rules and private voting booths and things like that. And she wanted to make sure that the people around the table here in particular understand that the federal law, both UCAVA and the federal absentee ballot, have requirements that match her preference that voters verify in writing that they were free to vote their conscience. When the mail ballot was defeated in Colorado about 2003, I think, by a 60% to 40% vote, I may add, the people were taught to understand that while they may not be intimidated, they have to worry about their neighbors. And part of what the requirement on group voting and putting voting parties together, if you will, or the equivalent, not voting in private, deals with the ability to sell a ballot. So if you can show somebody your ballot, then you can promise them that you're going to vote it that way because they see it. Whereas if you don't have the authority to show the person your ballot, they have to trust that you're going to take their $25 and vote it whatever way you want it. In addition, the reason for having the protection from group voting deals with spouses and, let's say, church members, union members, advocates for this, that, and the other thing, who want to have joint voting so that somebody will check to make sure you voted the way you're supposed to vote. And Marilyn is strongly advocating, and I join her, against opening that terrible, terrible window. And I thank you for the extra time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mary Eberle.
Are we supposed to give our address and so forth?
I have it on the record, so if you just introduce yourself. If you're representing someone else, let us know that. Otherwise, just tell us your name.
Thank you. Well, I'm Mary Eberle, and I'm representing myself today. And first, I want to say that I completely agree with what Al has spoken with you about, and I hope you will have an opportunity and take the opportunity to meet with us and have a really in-depth dialogue about what could be done. I don't think there's anything the matter with the law as far as the Canvas Board is concerned. I think what is the problem is that people are taking the very powerful word reconcile that's in the law twice in terms of the tasks of the or the duties, it says, of the Canvas Board, and dumbing that word down to, well, the spreadsheet adds up correctly, so that's all we have to do. That word is a powerful word, and it means taking various pieces of information and putting them together and seeing if everything balances and just checking a couple of numbers, which Boulder County never actually got around to, by the way, and even though some signed off and said they did, we never saw the numbers until after the Canvas Board was adjourned. Anyway, I hope we can do more on the Canvas Board, but that's not why I'm here at the moment. But I do want to really support what Al was saying and hope we can do more with it. I want to talk about, and this is really the reason for the rules. It's to create an election process at the retail level, so to speak, down where the voters are, down where the clerks and their staff exist. And I'm going to use a couple of pictures, and I know that there are people listening who can't see the pictures, so I'll describe them a little bit. Right here I have an elephant, and you'll notice it's blue. The elephant might represent the Republicans, and the blue might represent the Democrats. And just the whole concept is what I want to talk about, not one party or another, or one set of values and goals as then instead of another. I know you all are familiar with the story often told of how people might imagine an elephant to be if they were blindfolded and just taken to touch a certain part, say a leg, and try to describe how the whole elephant was if all they had was the leg or if that was what they were focusing on. I think that's what part of our problem in creating a good election process at the retail level has been, and I see that reflected in the way the rules are written. I've broken the process down into parts, and we, as people interested in elections in various ways, think about the parts, the part we're most familiar with and that we're trying to improve. So maybe the biggest thing is, as far as number of people, it's the voters who are thinking about their lives, and one piece of their lives is how they vote, and they have values they want to express in their vote, but they also have methods they want to use for their vote. And somehow that information comes to the legislatures, and maybe the legislators are represented by the trunk, because they can smell there was a problem, and the voters were expressing that there was a problem and wanted to make some changes. And other people involved are the clerks, the clerk staff, the Secretary of State and the Secretary of State staff here, and probably the Attorney General. There are a lot of official people who are involved. The Clerks Association. Anyhow, so there are a lot of parts of the election process, and people have certain roles to play and certain areas of interest. The part I'm involved in is a very small part, down this little front leg. Here's our picture again. The little front leg. It's a group of activists who are wanting to make sure our elections have integrity. And Colorado Voter Group is one of those groups. Coloradans for Voting Integrity, Citizen Center, there are others. And I'm specifically talking about the integrity of the election, pulling all these parts together to make a whole. And the problem is, if that leg, that little leg, we're a small number of people compared to all the voters in the state and the election officials and so forth. We're a small number. But if you take that leg away, that elephant is going to fall over. And that's what's been happening, because the things that we see that are lacking in the operation of the Canvas Board, the barriers to watchers. I've been a watcher for many elections, and it's more important now than ever before to have watchers helping check signatures, have watchers looking at the process, signing off on parts of the process and saying, yes, we saw that the boxes, the ballots were coming in from the post office, and those boxes got counted, and the ballots were batched. Everything went through the system. It's really important for watchers to be up close and personal with all the pieces of the election. And I've seen that not happening. And it really disturbs me, in particular, signature verification can't be slowed down where a watcher feels that a decision should be reviewed. Instead, that ballot just zips on right through the system. And yes, the watcher can write down Joe Smith on a form, and that goes to the district attorney, or perhaps the county attorney, but in any case, to an attorney who either calls up Joe Smith and asks what happened with your ballot, or doesn't, as the case may be. Depending on the county, probably. But it would be much better if the watcher could say to the judge or judges looking at the signature, it looks like the rules that the secretary has provided to check signatures aren't met here. Could you look again? Could you look at the slant? Could you look at some specific problem that the watcher sees with the signature? The watcher's standing there for all the voters to make sure that only good ballots get passed through and put into the system for counting. So anyway, that's an example. I think that this little leg of people who are trying to work on the integrity and keep the elephant from going upside down and sideways. I hope that our voices will be heard and that we will be sought out, as many of us have devoted a lot of time to become experts in this area. That's not to say that there aren't other groups that have the priority of a good election that they define by maximizing the turnout, and they work to do that. That's certainly a great part and part of this elephant. But that doesn't mean that the integrity should be ignored. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have Ralph Schnevelar.
Ralph Schnevelar, I'm the Libertarian Party Chair, Boulder County. I'm also running for Boulder County Clerk and Recorder this election cycle. I have been a watcher, and I have been greatly distressed by the observation of people verifying signatures, in point of fact, not verifying signatures, basically bouncing on the accept button as fast as they can as signatures fly by. So I'm going to be making two recommendations for rule changes. The first, that the amount of time per signature be set at 10 seconds per, so that there's no reason for them to be bouncing on the accept key. They were obviously trying to get through this process as quickly as possible, or perhaps trying to earn some brownie points from the county clerk. I don't know what the truth is, but whatever it is simply not possible to be verifying signatures at the rate of approximately 1.8 seconds per signature. The second thing I'd like to recommend is that the watchers, upon request, be given a list of signatures or voter names in the order as presented to the signature verifiers, so that the watcher can make a mark and then immediately hand it to the designated election official who handles protests. If at all possible, it would be great if you guys could change the rules so that if a watcher protests a signature, that ballot be segregated from the ballots that are about to be opened. I will finish, and I thank you for allowing me to speak. I will finish by saying I heartily agree with Al Kolwitz and Mary Eberly in what they have said. The election processes from Election Integrity Activists has been greatly degraded. Let us not further degrade them if at all possible. Let's improve that process. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Margaret Johansson?
Hello, my name is Margaret Johansson. I'm from Boulder County. I do belong to Coloradans for Voting Integrity, a nonprofit, nonpartisan volunteer organization. But these comments are mine just because I haven't run them by the organization. I would like to propose one or two rules. The first one has to do with the fact that to date election rules have not adequately addressed the content of CRS 1, 8.3, 113.1. And it's for overseas and military voters, known as UOCAVA. And this law states a covered voter who requested and received ballot materials by electronics submission may also return the ballot by electronic transmission in circumstances where another more secure method, such as returning the ballot by mail, is not available or feasible, as specified in rules promulgated by the Secretary of State. Nowhere in rules at this point is the requirement to avoid returning a voted ballot electronically under certain circumstances acknowledged. Yet this proviso is crucial to maximizing chances for secure elections and a secret ballot. The facts are overwhelming that the internet cannot be made secure, and use of electronics in remote voting for military and overseas citizens is too risky to be indulged in. The latest example of this is the recent allowed hack by prominent computer security experts in a mock election for Estonia. For a report and video, visit Estonia e-voting, all one word, .org. EstoniaEvoting.org. The present state law allows return of voted ballots by email or fax. This law should never have been passed to allow such returns because email is part of the internet and it's very insecure. This is because of recent additions to federal law for military and overseas voters, such as the MOVE Act. The MOVE Act now requires election officials to send blank ballots to remote voters at least 45 days in advance and allows sending blank ballots out electronically. The MOVE Act did not provide for electronic returns of voted ballots with good reason. Here is a suggested rule to address the current absence of protection for voting integrity. Quote, to minimize security risks associated with use of the internet, voted ballots must only be returned by postal mail or Federal Express and not by email or other electronic means. Any electors whose blank ballots are sent to them later than 45 days before an election must be clearly given the option to be reimbursed for the expense of a FedEx return. All right, that's my try at keeping Iwokawa voters safe, their votes safe. And the second thing, I just ask your advice on what can be done about this. Hopefully there's some kind of a rule that can be done. But in SB 14-161, it took out the provision that existed before where with online voter registration, online meaning it's also really insecure, it was required to send a non-forwardable postcard to an elector's old address in the event of an online registration address change. And before this came up in 161, I sometimes get around to sending out new bits of publications or interesting statements by computer security people. So I had sent out a quote from computer security expert Barbara Simons, PhD. And as an introduction to an article she was sending out by Wired magazine, she stated, quote, I believe this article has obvious connections to internet voting and online registration. With internet voting, not only can ballot secrecy be compromised, but a man-in-the-middle attack can, as observed in the last paragraph below, be used to modify the ballot without the voter's knowledge. And then, with online voting registration, the risk is that a voter's address could be modified, again, without the voter's knowledge. This could be a serious problem in states that are primarily or exclusively vote by mail, and of course, now that's us. But it could also be a problem if voters find on election day that they are listed at a different physical location from the one they expect. And then it goes on to say, the article demonstrates that election officials need to have procedures in place to deal with the risk that online address changes could be compromised. An obvious response to an address change is to mail paper confirmation to both the old and new addresses. And when I sent this out, one of the secretary's staff wrote back and said, but we already have that in effect, that sending out of a postcard as a check that fraud has not been committed. So in SB 14-161, the postcard check was eliminated. And I find this to be quite astonishing and quite, never mind. And I was hoping that the Secretary of State's staff could think of some way in rules to put that check back, because right now online registration is remarkably insecure without checks, some checks. And I don't know if you could have a rule that the Secretary of State was going to take over that function of checking, sending out postcards. I would try to help you find funding to cover it for the first couple of years if it was too much for your budget. Anyway, That's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Mitchell Wright.
Thank you. I'll pass.
Oh, okay. See, the next person is Polly Cardwell, but that's also a no. Okay. Elizabeth Friel? No. Okay. Danetta Davidson?
Thank you. Appreciate it. My name is Donetta Davidson, and I'm here representing CCCA, which is the Colorado Clerk and Recorders Association. And I'm only here to discuss a couple of the proposed rules. First is Rule 7.2.6, which requires an additional signature on the back of the ballot if an individual is giving it to another individual to deliver to the county clerk's office. We do appreciate the January date, and if that wasn't in place, I'd like to go over some of the concerns the clerks had, because they were concerned about it if it was implemented right away. First of all, they were concerned because many of them ordered supplies. When they order their supplies for primary, they also order for the general. And so their envelopes have already been ordered, and they have them in-house. Others have already placed their orders, and I believe you have even done a little bit of checking with the clerks how many of them is in that position. Another one of the concerns of the bilingual counties is the concern of having enough space on the envelope to be able to handle both of the languages on the back of the envelope. That one may be not a concern. We just don't know at this time. Then, given the late time frame of the adoption of probably the rules, maybe late August or somewhere in August there, the adoption of them, if that was adopted right away or if adopted in a few days, it still is a problem whether we could get the rules, get the envelopes printed in time, because they have to be verified by the post office, the UPS post office. They have to agree that they're fine, and then we also have to have them ready for the Yukawa delivery September 20th. So it's a short period of time there that we're really kind of discussing, that a little over a month. They also are concerned that the rule is enforceable with the 24-hour drop boxes. So that was a real concern of theirs.
Well, I want to ask you about that, because the rule is really to try to have some kind of enforcement mechanism for the 10 ballots mm-hmm. per person. How do you enforce that? So, I understand there's enforceability issues because you're not at the 24-hour drop box. You can't see when people are, how do you enforce the 10? Isn't this getting you closer to being able to know one way or the other if that's happening?
Well, I guess I'd like to tell you about what we do suggest.
Okay.
Because I really don't have the answer, but I think if we would like to suggest that we work with the Secretary of State's office, the association, and go before the legislature and put something in the law to really work with it and see how we can address it. We're not opposed to trying to do something, but to maybe look at it and have it really be put into the law.
Well, and this rule, as you know, is supposed to be effective January 1, 2015. So I think that if that were to happen, the rule would likely be repealed. But short of that, we used to have logs at the clerk's office, and because we didn't really have the 24-hour drop boxes, and people were supposed to sign the log when they brought the ballot in. So in light of the 24-hour drop boxes and no place to sign when you bring it in, how do you do something with that?
I don't have the answer, and I apologize. We haven't really sat down. All we were doing is reviewing the rules, and we didn't come up with answers. But we'd like to work with you on it.
Well, we don't have an answer either, except this. It's not that we thought this was the perfect solution to a problem, but I guess I'm just saying, if you have any other ideas in the association, we're certainly... we would love to hear them, before adoption of the rule. But as it stands now, there's just no way to even come close to knowing whether that's occurring or not.
Yes, and we really do appreciate the January date. And the only reason why I brought up the other areas is because we noticed some notes that had come in that is posted that is urging you to do approve it in the rules that is coming up immediately. So that's the reason why we went into that for the hearing today. And definitely I'll go back and tell them that we'd like to really, we should think about it, and if we've got some ideas, to get it into you right away.
Okay, great.
The last one is on... it's really about two rules that kind of work together, 8.6.8 and 8.6.9. And the real problem there is the watchers, and they one of them says that 8.6.8 states that a watcher may not attempt to really get the information or obtain information on the confidential information, obtain. And the word obtain is really our problem, because when you look that up in the dictionary, you get into, it comes into possession of, you get acquire. You can even ask for the information by definition. So that word is concerning to us. And if you're implementing something like that, all of our judges, election officials, they go through, as you're aware, they go through a lot of checks and balances. First, they have to have training, and training from the SOS as well, which we have no problem with. And they also have to have background checks. Watchers do not have to have training or the background checks. So if watchers are going to be given or are able to collect that type of information, that's our concern with those two laws and how they're kind of written, and they're kind of written in harmony. So we'd really like for you to look at that, at least clarify it. If not, we'd urge you to not adopt those two rules, and let's really look at what we want in those watcher areas. So it's the confidential information that we're concerned with. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak here today, and if you have any further questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Anyone else? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amber McReynolds.
Good afternoon. My name is Amber McReynolds. I'm the Director of Elections for Denver. And I'm also co-chair of the Election Statute Review Committee for the Clerks Association, so I'm here on behalf of that committee today to provide some fairly technical feedback on the proposed rules, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity to provide feedback, and we'll also submit written. I'm just going to cover a couple of the points for the discussion today. First, for Rule 1.1.13, page 3, line 18, we believe that the word directly should be struck, and primarily for that because per security requirements, system certification, conditions of use, the EMS systems within the county are not networked and thus cannot directly import into the ENR system. So I think just striking directly probably deals with that issue. Rule 1.1.29, we believe that actually the optical scanner definition should be broken into a definition for optical scanner and a definition for digital scanner. As an example, one proposal that we had for optical scanner is the process of interpreting data in printed, handwritten, barcode, or other visual format formed by a device. As an example, in HART, optical scanner does not actually tabulate. Separate software does that, so it operates in more of a digital scanner mode. So we just thought that the definition there might not be quite what it needs to be with current systems and systems going forward. Rule 2.2.2, we were concerned about the strike of the second half of that rule, primarily because if they have signed the affirmation that they've moved into Colorado and met the 22-day residency requirement by accepting a postmark and ignoring the affidavit, potentially a registration would be deemed invalid, even though it possibly could be. So we just, I guess, questioned that strike and would urge you to consider the sort of process ramifications of that removal. 2.13.4, there was a lot of concern amongst counties on the 7-day window, primarily for when cancellations have come out after general elections previously. There's been a large amount of records that have required additional research, technical research, and so especially amongst the large counties, they felt that the volume that may require additional research may not be viable to do in 7 days, in particular because we wouldn't assign data entry staff or what have you to do that. It would be more of a research specialist, and it may take longer to do that. So we would like to see it farther out, possibly 21 or at least 14 days there. Rule 7.2.6, Danetta referenced this, but there was also a lot of discussion about the process on the back end. Should that be added to the affidavit, and the discussion amongst the committee in reviewing this was, number one, I think the affirmation is a legislative fix, so we definitely would like to work from that framework. But also looking at it, if it is a regulation on third-party ballot pickup, possibly considering voter registration drive guidelines or something like that to be incorporated into Title I to formalize the process on this level. But also, with the 10 ballot rule generally that currently exists in Title I, that's a rule for ballots being dropped to the clerk's office. It doesn't do anything to address ballots being mailed at a post office box. So the enforceability is somewhat of a concern amongst the counties, and it has been since that has been in place in statute, because with the post office, there is no rule like that.
But you can't really enforce it on... I mean, what would you do if someone came into the clerk's office with 20 ballots?
Well,
wouldn't you take the ballots?
We take them. We take them. We have them write down, sign the log, and then we mail them a letter after the election saying, per statute, you can't do this.
So when it comes to enforceability, it's not as though...
It's after the fact. I mean, we can't tell somebody, we're not going to send somebody away with ballots.
Exactly.
And it's the same. I mean, if there's... And that's what I think the concern is. If there's more... regulation on the clerks, people, if they can't drop it with us, they're just going to go put it through the mail stream. So, if we're really regulating third-party ballot pickup, rules around that probably aren't going to get there. It's probably more of a, voter registration drive type of process. So, Rule 8.6.8, So the concerns, and Danetta covered some of this, but the change in the rule from observe to obtain is a problem, and it's sort of creating a security conflict for SCORE end users, meaning election judges that access the system. The AUP agreement that we have to sign per the acceptable use policy through the state states in part that users may not display or provide sensitive information to unauthorized persons. This rule applies to Social Security numbers contained in document images on workstations and to other personal and confidential information such as date of birth, driver's license number, etc. So those are some of the fields displayed on the screen in the web app, in SCORE, whatever it is, and by the change from observe to obtain, now we are opening that up for observation amongst what I would call unauthorized persons who haven't gone through the background check that's also required in another rule, and I think it makes it difficult for us to ask users to sign this agreement when they truly can't protect the information in there. So I think the concern for the counties at least was not about access, but about confidential information in voter records, including those full dates of birth, driver's license, Social Security number, in particular fields. And the other piece of this rule, we felt that it would be important to separate out that watchers may not attempt to determine how someone voted and then separate that from observe confidential information, so make it two different sections within that rule. And we would recommend the change from obtain to observe. simply to protect the voters' private confidential information, not only in confidential records, but in records that are not confidential. And I know as a voter, I would have that same concern. Rule 10.1.4E, lines 13 through 17, and we're going to send in some suggested language, but counties normally have the statement of ballot forms come back daily. At least many counties do this. They reconcile against the number of votes cast on a daily basis. So allowing for that to happen is really where our modifications may come in. And then also it is physically impossible for large counties for judges to return the unvoted ballots on election night. So many of the large counties have what we call vaults or very large storage units that are sealed, secured, locked each night, and you know, having those come back in on election night after 7, 8 o'clock at night is probably not the best method or the most secure process that the counties would want to see. So we have proposed some language that hopefully would make that better from a process perspective. And then Rule 16.2.1E, this is for UOCAVA voters, and the suggestion from the counties is similar to undeliverable ballots. We'd like to suggest that if the email comes back undeliverable that we've mailed to the UOCAVA voter, that we don't continue to email that same email address. So they would be taken off the electronic transmission and put back on a mail ballot being sent out until they updated their email address. We wouldn't want to continue to send their ballot information potentially to an email address that we know has come back as not valid. So that was just something for your consideration as a suggestion. And we will, again, submit written comments on some of these. But with that, I'm happy to take questions.
Any questions? All right, thank you.
So actually, I had one real quick, sorry. I was curious about the 10.1.4E. So you, at the Denver Elections Office, you have ballots out in the field on election night that you don't bring in?
We bring all the voted in. The unvoted inventory is picked up the next morning because there's no way that anyone physically, we have to hire professional movers to bring that back in. Okay. They're very large cabinets that frankly can't be moved physically. Okay. So.
All right. I'm just curious about that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Elena Nunez?
Good afternoon. My name is Elena Nunez. I'm the Executive Director of Colorado Common Cause. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that works for open and accountable government and to increase participation in the political process. We've also submitted written comments, which you have. I just wanted to highlight a few issues as part of today's hearing. First, on Rule 2.13.5, we oppose the deletion of this rule. The National Voter Registration Act, the NVRA, prohibits the systematic removal from the statewide voter registration list within 90 days of a primary or general election, and we believe that rule was consistent with that prohibition. Whether or not the rule is in place, that requirement is still in full force and effect, but we think there's greater clarity by maintaining that rule, and so we would urge the Secretary of State's office to not delete it. On 7.2.6, there's already been a good bit of discussion on this. We do oppose the adoption of this rule. We think it's problematic for a few reasons. First, because it imposes the requirement on the voter to complete an affirmation or the affidavit stating the name of the person that they've given their ballot to. If they've asked a third party, whether it's an organization or a roommate or a spouse, they have to fill that out. And there's no statutory basis for imposing this rule. We also have concerns about how it would be implemented and what it would mean if it was partially completed or there was a suggestion that it wasn't completed or it was signed and the other affirmation was. We think it opens up a lot of ambiguity and it could be applied in different ways. And given that there is no real force and effect in terms of enforcement, introducing that confusion is problematic and therefore we would oppose it. But then moreover, in terms of the actual language of the affirmation, we think that's problematic as well. And I want to correct some concerns that were addressed earlier about our opposition to this rule. To be clear, we think that it is completely appropriate to maintain that voters cannot show their ballot to another, their voted ballot to another person. That's in statute. We think that's appropriate. There's good reasons for that. Same with the language around intimidation. Those two pieces are in Article 13. We think that makes perfect sense. But that's not actually what the affirmation says. What it says is that you voted in private and that no one has influenced your vote. And influence and intimidation are two different things. And that, and private versus showing your voted ballot to another person is not synonymous. So we think that you're actually asking voters to affirm to something that's not actually supported by law. We don't think it's appropriate to adopt any version in rule, but we think it's more appropriate if there's concern about third-party ballot delivery to have that conversation legislatively. On Rule 9.2, this is another one where I know there's been a lot of comment as well. We are opposed to the adoption of this rule. We opposed the legislation, Senate Bill 1479, which proposed a very similar process. We had concerns about due process rights for voters as part of that legislation. We think it's inappropriate and not within rulemaking authority to include it as part of the rulemaking and doesn't work in practice. There's a difference between challenging a voter at the polls and challenging a voter by mail, and there is a statute that addresses mail challenges. To challenge a voter using the polling place statute, where the voter has no due process, and to disenfranchise that voter is problematic. We encourage the Secretary of State to reject the adoption of this rule, and if there's further language around challenges that needs to happen, that conversation is one that should be a legislative one. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you all have. Thank you.
Do you have any questions? All right. Robert Bowen.
Thank you. I submitted my testimony in advance, and there's only one thing I want to highlight, and that's 213.2, which the, or 213.4, which has already been addressed. My concern is that 7 days is not enough time for big counties, as was said, but let me just give you another illustration that, hit me personally on this. I had never missed any kind of an election voting since the time I was 21. And a few years back, under a different Secretary of State, I had voted in the primary, and then I had to go out of town on business. I requested an absentee ballot, and it wasn't coming, and it wasn't coming, and the election was getting close, so I called up, and they told me I wasn't registered. I said, I voted in the primary. How can I not be registered? And they didn't know, but they called me back and said the Secretary of State's office had sent a thing saying that I should be purged. Because I had been an elected official and knew the Denver Election Commissioner personally, I was sent an absentee ballot. I'm not so sure under this rule if she could have done that. And there was no time to investigate because it was within, I mean, it was within 10 days of the actual election because it was an absentee ballot. I think that you need to be very careful about purging people in error because mistakes happen. And that was what happened to me, and because I knew the system and I knew the people and was known by the election officer, I got to vote. Most citizens in that situation with me would not get to vote. And so I think you need to take a good look at that rule, and I think you also need to ask the question, could the election officer even allowed me to be put on the polls and an absentee ballot sent that close to the election? And that's when I discovered that I wasn't registered, was when I didn't get the absentee ballot. So all my other comments are in line. I have nothing to add to those.
Thank you. Questions? Rudy Gonzalez.
Hello, and thank you. Rudy Gonzalez, I'm with the Colorado Latino Forum. I'm a Denver chapter co-chair for our Denver chapter and also sit on the statewide board. And I'm here just to strongly urge, as part of our coalition statewide, that this body retract Rule 9.2, 9.2.1, 9.2.2, and 9.2.3, and that is challenging the voters at the polling site. So I think it opens this body and the Secretary of State's office, it opens it up to possible claims of discrimination. Also, it is a, I feel it's a foundation for racial profiling. So please retract 9.2. Thank you.
Thank you. Angelo Alfaro.
Thank you. First, I would like to echo sentiments that were said by Elena Nunez and also Rudy Gonzalez. First off with 7.2.6, I would like to see this retracted. I feel that this rule places an undue burden on marginalized communities that are already facing disenfranchisement, and communities that have transportation issues in getting to polling places by putting on additional information on their ballots in order to be counted. And I think that these are people who definitely need to be heard in this democracy, and when you place additional burdens on them, it gives them even less reason to participate. I also want to echo what Rudy said about 9.2.1, 9.2.2, and 9.2.3. According to Senator Jesse Ulibarri, he has already submitted comments via email to this public comment session, where he stated that these rules are in direct conflict with Colorado revised statutes, and this body should exist to enforce rules that are on the statutes, not directly conflict with them. And what I believe these proposed rules would do is overturn laws that should be left to be discussed within the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jordan Trippett Sowers or Sawyer? Sowers? No. Okay. Mary Thunberg? No, no. It's all yours if you want it.
First, I have a question. What is the deadline for the online suggestions?
It's going to be Thursday, August 21st.
So we still have time to submit those. Okay, yes. Is that midnight of August 21st?
Yes.
Okay. And then I'm the last public testimony person. Is that it?
No, there's someone after you.
Okay. But I'd like to know who some of these other people represent. Do they represent organizations?
Well, it's a public meeting, so they can come and
so
they don't have to identify
themselves.
They don't themselves
have to sign in like I do, and they can just listen to what I have to say.
Sure.
So they won't identify themselves.
They don't. They're under no obligation to identify themselves.
I see. Thank you. First of all, I want to start that we are a republic. We are not a democracy. Democracy stands for mob rule. The point I want to make is, first, that our vote, I would not want to steal this person's vote, who had every opportunity to go immediately, if he found he was kicked off of the voter rolls, that he could immediately probably get back on those rolls within 24 hours. So I think our real issue is we have people who are claiming to be voters who are not legitimate voters, and that steals my ballot. And that's the whole issue of having honest voting with integrity. So everyone should be committed to making sure that every vote that is counted is legitimate. And the first thing that I want to suggest is I certainly want to, I'm Adams County GOP, and I want to especially encourage you to continue to enforce Rule 9.2, 9.21, 9.22, 9.23. If this assists in any way in making sure that those ballots that we are counting are legitimate, we need to keep this on the books. And there's a lot of work behind having established these rules to begin with. The suggestion that I want to make is that one of the suggestions I want to make is that a woman by the name of Divi Kidd, and that is spelled D as in David, I-V-V as in Victor, Y, last name Kidd, K-I-D-D, has done a great amount of research and have proven that the digital systems that we use to count ballots can be corrupt. And so we're not going to eliminate voting through the machines that count digitally, but I'm requesting that after that vote is declared, and we want it like within minutes of, you know, of the close of the vote, meaning a few hours, well, I request that we have hand-counted ballot initiative. It may take 3 months. We have to go through and count those ballots, and we have to do it with watchers, and we seem to have the money to give foreign governments. Obama just gave $2 billion to the South African government just after he spent $200 million going to that state trip. So the point I'm trying to make is that if we're going to listen to county clerk and recorders and say, well, we can't afford to reissue envelopes that would protect voter integrity, and we're just going to have to do what we've been doing, which is going along with the problems that we have had, that is putting our vote at risk. And we have to do this honestly and fairly, and I think anybody turning in a vote for somebody else, if I go to a senior citizen house and I help those senior citizens turn in their votes because they're in bed and they need that assistance, I'm willing to put my name on that envelope that says I turned in that vote for that person, and you can put on another piece of paper in the envelope to say that's who did it. And if you find that there's somebody who's turning in thousands of votes, you might say that's a little red alert, or there's more than what would be reasonable. And if you are taking collections for certain places like hospitals and senior citizens' homes, we can identify the people who are working in those facilities to do that as a volunteer. So the point of the story is we are a republic, and we have to maintain the principles that we were established in our Constitution. I'm going to present another piece of information, which is, as you may know, and you may not think this is relevant, but it is very relevant. In the Democrat Socialists of Germany, the Nazi Party got something like 90% approval rating for Hitler, because there was such pressure to vote his party. And I was in Westminster, and I was asking if I could have, I forgot what it's called. It's called a ballot where, you know, I'm on a mail-in ballot system so that I get my ballot. But I can say, I turn this in, and I want another ballot so my name and my number is not associated. And I forgot, what's that called? Do you know what that's called?
Name and numbers, not where you're a confidential voter or something?
Well, I'm saying that I've been told through Marilyn Marks on the radio that I can ask for I thought it was started with an L. It's like, okay, I don't want to vote my mail-in ballot.
Surrender your ballot and request to vote another type of ballot.
Yeah, okay, that's it. And do you know what that's called?
Yes. Some people call it a paper ballot. Some people call it a flat ballot.
Oh, I think it's called a flat ballot. Okay, so I can request a flat ballot. So I went to the city of Westminster that was only collecting these. I could not get a flat ballot from this person. And she said, it doesn't make any difference anyway, because we're going to know how you vote. And the privacy, and this is from the Westminster Clerk and Recorder. And her name escapes me at the moment.
You're talking about the Westminster Municipal Clerk?
Yes.
So these rules don't affect municipal elections.
Okay, well, what about the primary? Because I was there for the primary to turn in my ballot, and I asked for a flat ballot. And she said, Don't bother going to 84th and Federal, you know, where the other polling place is.
Yeah, they were a drop location.
Yeah, I know they were a drop location.
So they couldn't issue you one.
I understand that's not the issue. She suggested that I not bother going to the 84th and Federal because they were going to be able to see how I voted anyway. Well, the Okay, I'm just telling you, that is what I was served from. If somebody mentions her name, I'll say that's her name. But anyway, I just want everybody to know that we have problems in our votes counting. And I want to encourage all the measures that have been instituted. And I'd urge that every person who turns in a ballot for somebody else identify themselves clearly. And if it's stated, you need to put your, right there, your name and your address, with your city and zip code. And if you don't put that there, this vote doesn't count. So that they know right away there is no confusion. So we need to make sure what those regulations are, because I want to show you a chart, two charts, that were done by an Idaho state representative, Curtis Bowers. He spent a year and a half creating these two charts. The first chart shows the different schools of communism that came out of Karl Marx. And the other is who, then everything here, and I've got a copy for everybody in this room. People who carried these different schools of communists through to the different organizations that were created. One of them, I'm just going to mention because I can't mention them all, is ACORN. It shows where ACORN comes from and the sectors of our culture to be infiltrated. And then the second chart is the members of the Communist Party in Obama's administration. We must know what's going on and have honest elections.
Okay.
It's relevant to our country and our freedom.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Martha Tierney?
Is my request to put in into the records?
You just give a copy to her. And she'll get that
I would like
record.
Everyone to have an individual copy.
Okay.
We have a country to save, folks.
I'm going to try to top that.
Yeah.
Martha Tierney, I'm here today on behalf of the Colorado Democratic Party. I did submit written comments. I just want to supplement them slightly, mentioning a couple, maybe three or four here today for purposes of the hearing. Rule 2.2.2, I will echo the comments of Director McReynolds. I think that by deleting the language that the rule proposes to delete, we defer to we ignore the affirmation where the voter is affirming that they meet the qualifications, the eligibility qualifications, and by It reminds me of the checkbox situation we had about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, where lots of people forgot to check the box, and it created a big problem in voter registration where all those voters didn't get registered. Here, if a person forgets to put the move date, we're now defaulting. Rather than using the affirmation where they've affirmed their eligibility, we'd be defaulting to the postmark date or the date of receipt, which might not be more than 22 days. So I would urge that we put that language back in, and if the voter has affirmed eligibility, which is what all that 12-101-1B requires, that they should be meet the eligibility requirements for residency.
Martha, could I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
Do you understand, I probably should have asked Amber as well, this provision is in here solely for the purpose of determining the durational residency requirements to participate in the party's precinct caucus, which it still has.
So, I totally agree that those requirements are still there. I don't think that it's clear in the rule that that's all this would apply to.
Okay.
So maybe that's a clarification.
Thanks.
7.2.5, The issue, this is the rule that requires the clerks to include a statement that it's a violation of law to drop off more than 10 ballots. My concern here is that we need to put all of the language of the law if we're going to add that statement, because you do have situations where you've got people living in assisted living facilities or other facilities that are serviced by duly authorized agents of the county clerk and recorder, where they would be allowed to pick up more ballots. And I think that's a chilling statement that voters might get confused and think that even in those situations they might not be able to give the ballot to the person of their choice. So if we're going to have language like that included, I think it's got to recite, include all of the language in the statute, which includes the duly authorized agent of the clerk or the designated election official, that they may receive more. I also think that it would be important to include, to actually quote the statute there, so that it's not framed in the negative. Rather, it's any person, you may give this ballot to any person of your choice to deliver, and then include the 10 limit and the duly authorized, so that it's not framed as don't do this. It's framed, you can do this, but here are the limitations. Similarly, 7.2.6, I think, is a disaster waiting to happen, because I think that by, first of all, I'll echo Elena's comments on the private language. There's no requirement in the law that you vote your ballot in private, and people vote their ballots in their houses, at the kitchen table, where their kid is watching television 10 feet away. Is that private? They might vote them on the bus, where they're in their own seat on their way to work. I don't think that is private. But they can do that so long as they're not disclosing their ballot, revealing their ballot. And we don't want to make it harder to vote. So if we're going to use language, let's use the actual language from the law.
Not to tip our hand, but that's actually on the UACAVA. That's where we got it.
Private?
The language comes off the UACAVA.
Ballot?
Yes.
The envelope.
Well, okay, let me add my comment to that.
So you change that.
Yeah. So we didn't just make it up. That's all I'm saying. Okay. It did come from someone.
And then the writing the name down, I think, it's going to lead to a lot of problems. I see what happens if someone doesn't write the name down.
I agree. That needs to be clarified that, you know, obviously the vote's going to get counted. This is for purpose of sending a letter to the person that is turning in too many.
If they turn in too many.
Right.
Okay.
And there's no, we will clarify that if we end up adopting it. I've heard those comments. And certainly this is not to say we're not going to count the ballot. It's to attempt to track and, you know, stop behavior where somebody's turning in more than 10, since we have no way to track that right now. I understand you still object, but
yeah, that's my fear is that it may chill participation again, and that people who are just turning in the ballots of their family members may be worried that they're in trouble because they're not sure why they have to put their name on the outside of the ballot. I think it's just chilling. And then finally, 9.2, actually I'll do two more, 9.2 and 14.4.6. Let's do 9.2 first. 9.2 I don't think you can do. It's not supported in the law at all. It's creating a new process whereby two judges can just decide willy-nilly to reject votes in a ballot. You can't do that. You have to notify the voter and give the voter a right to respond to that. And maybe you intend that, but that's not what this rule says.
No, this rule would track, the process would track what? The judges already have the ability to
send a letter to the voter.
Right.
Okay. Because that's not evident in the rule.
Yeah.
The rule, in light of that, the rule doesn't mention that there already exists a mail ballot challenge statute, right? 19207, which doesn't set forth. So you cite 19207, 201, I think, right, which is the ballots can be challenged statute. But that's not the statute then that talks about what the bases are. And then 19207 is for mail ballots and doesn't have the all the bases. So I think that there's probably a legislative fix that needs to happen here so that there could be rulemaking about what the bases are for challenging a mail ballot. As you know, in person, there's only three bases for challenge: age, citizenship, residency. And my sense is that the way this is written, it could be interpreted that there would be all sorts of other bases for challenge. And that seems to me to be a risk. But I'm pleased to hear that the due process issue will be addressed. Then 14.4.6, which is the VRD, the only VRD rule. And the rule is about marking, highlighting, and marking on the forms. I wanted to ask you about that because VRDs often do highlight because it helps accuracy and completeness in the VRD forms. And my sense is the concern there is that it's obscuring the text when it comes back, maybe, and it's harder to read. Maybe there's a way to allow some sort of marking but not allow it to obscure the text, because I think VRDs are getting a much better product by marking because of completeness and accuracy. Now, I get that that's defeating the purpose if then it can't be read once it's turned in. So, but maybe there's a middle ground there where we can say, you know, you can't mark in a way that would obscure the text, or you can place a dot next to the line items that must be completed so that, because I think you will see the completeness and accuracy, and the clerks will see the completeness and accuracy of those forms radically reduce if they can't help the voter by pointing out which are mandatory fields.
So I can just, to answer the question, the rule is being proposed because just with highlighting, what happens is a lot of VRDs like highlight the, you know, residential
the whole line
field, and it looks fine until it's scanned into SCORE, at which point it's
can't read
completely
it.
Unreadable. And then I know there have been situations where VRDs are making notations or supplying the information that the voters should be supplying before they sign the affirmation. Retroactively supplying somebody's driver's license. We see that. And a lot of times those just come in on as a post-it note on the voter registration drive registration form that is submitted. And so that part of the rule is really directed at, you know, voter registration drives obviously have the right to go out and do this, but the voter should be completing the form and signing the affirmation rather than having it being kind of corrected after the fact. So those were the two issues that prompted the rule. Mm.
I mean, I guess the after-the-fact piece is probably trying for them to try to make the form complete, right? If a voter signs up with VRDX and then they don't have the driver's license on them and they go home and they get it and they call up VRDX and say, hey, here's my driver's license number. What is prohibiting, like what in the law says that the VRD can't put that in if the voter is saying, please put that in for me?
Well, they're altering a form that the voter has already affirmed under oath is correct.
But at the voter's request, it's
well,
not as though.
The tough one to regulate.
Yeah. I mean, I'll also.
I want you to know the reason, the rationale.
There is a statement in your, maybe two statements in your online training that tells the VRD to mark the forms. So.
Well, we should.
Yeah. you know, it seems to me we want to encourage voter registration and make it easier for
Great.
People to be registered. So,
encourage VRDs to get complete forms.
Absolutely.
Totally. So, okay.
All right. Can I answer any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks. That's all the people I had signed up. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak who didn't sign up? I'm going to come up to the podium, sir, and then, maybe we have you.
Thank you. Name is Mike Donahue. And I'm here today to talk about proposed new rules 7.2.5, 7.2.6. And in the last person speaking was talking about it being chilling for somebody to have to put their name on the ballot that they were the ones that delivered, that it could be chilling to either the voter or to that person. I see that as nothing less than total transparency. And I believe that's why it's in here, so that we know who is actually turning in the ballots. I believe also, along with limiting the number of ballots that can be turned in at 10, should also be limited to the number of ballots that can actually be collected by any one of these folks to 10. And there again, there should be no problem with them putting their name and their address so that we have complete transparency as to what is going on here. The third point that I would like to make is I think this rule these two rules need to be implemented immediately so that they are ready for the ballot drop in the 2014 election. I don't think we need to wait until the 2016 election to implement these. They're pretty simple rules, pretty simple process for this to happen. The reason why I want to see no more than 10 collected by any one person and 10 turned in by any one person is because of the way that this can promote voter fraud by people harvesting ballots at nursing homes, at assistance centers, those kinds of things. I don't want to see somebody being called in from Chicago or New York to go harvesting these ballots, and then if we only have the 10 rule on the turning in, we split them up so that many people can each turn in 10 ballots and do it anonymously. So back to my points, want to see no more than 10 collected, no more than 10 turned in, with full disclosure of the person that is collecting and turning them in with their name and address. It's very simple for the county clerk to assure that that is on there. If they have a question about their identity, they can ask them for a driver's license to prove up their identity. It's not much at all to expect so that we maintain proper voter balloting. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Okay. Then at this time, our office will take under advisement possible amendments to the Secretary of State's election rules, and the record will remain open through, I said midnight, so we'll just leave it at midnight, Thursday, October 21st, to allow the submission of additional written comments. This concludes today's hearing, and the time is 2:30.